The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
With Jaguar. Introducing Jaguar Checkered Flag Special Editions. Our world-class saloons and SUVs are better than ever, with more luxury as standard. Jaguar.ie.
It's February 1976, and Odessa, Texas, stands on the cusp of the next great oil boom. While the town's men embrace the coming prosperity, it's the women who intimately know and fear the violence that always seems to follow. This is the premise of debut author Elizabeth Wetmore's new novel, Valentine, which, as it happens, is our Eason Book Club pick for this month. We'll be reviewing the book from cover to cover on the 16th of July. But now I'm delighted to say I'm joined by its author. Elizabeth, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Now, this is your first book. I describe you as a debut author, but it was a long time in the making.
Indeed. I'm 52, and this is my debut novel. I worked on the book for about 14 years on and off. And to be fair, I often took long breaks from it to raise my son or earn a living or, you know, attend to the details of living. So, yes, it was a long time in the making.
Now, I mentioned it's our book club choice, so we will be discussing it in great detail, and many of our listeners will be reading it. So we have to be a bit careful about spoilers, depending on where people have reached in the novel. But it takes place in Odessa, Texas, which is actually where you grew up. What was it like as a place to grow up in?
Well, like a lot of people, I have a pretty complicated relationship with my hometown. I left when I was 18 with no particular plan and sort of tumbled out into the big wide world. But as a little girl growing up there, I remember it as being a kind of rough and tumble town that my parents worked very hard to sort of protect me from, I guess would be probably the best way to put it. So on the one hand, you know, we rode our bikes with abandon and moved around freely. And on the other hand, when there was an oil boom, we were sort of aware that, you know, that we had to sort of take care of ourselves and be mindful.
Mm. You've described it in the past as very small, 300 miles from everything. It's flat, it's treeless, and full of rattlesnakes and rats.
Yep, that sounds about right. It's actually, it's not a terribly small town, actually. It's a small city, really. But yes, it is. But in spite of being a small city, it very much feels like a small town. So
your parents protected you from the realities of the hard men, the hard drinking, and the rather probably cavalier attitudes that they would have had, because that accompanies all sorts of booms, be it oil, perhaps not a tech boom, but an oil or a copper boom or a tin boom or a coal boom.
Sure.
The kind of men, you know, who do that kind of work are living precariously anyway.
Yeah, you know, you see this with a couple of the characters in the book. When an oil boom happens, and especially in the 70s, because there were a lot of men who were returning to their hometowns from serving in the war, and they arrived home to discover that there was no work, so they made their way to West Texas to find work. And of course, you know, most of those young men were just, you know, young men looking to make a living. But of course, you know, that kind of economy attracts a fair amount of people who are coming from all over for all kinds of reasons, many of them on the run from one thing or another, and, you know, looking to make a quick buck in the oil field. So they're not there to put down roots in the town or to buy property or to start a family. They're there to make money. And of course, many of them also, you know, do have families that they've left behind. And so they live out in these large man camps and go for weeks and weeks and weeks without seeing their own family. So it's hard and dangerous work even today, but in the 1970s it was particularly hard and particularly dangerous work.
Now, you were a bookish kind of a child, maybe different from some of the people with whom you went to school, and you didn't kind of run around with these guys. In fact, you were probably leaving town to go to college before you would have had the opportunity to mix it up with these guys. But how did those classmates of yours or school friends of yours, what did they become?
Well, I should say, in complete honesty, I did not leave my hometown to go to college. I was actually a pretty mediocre high school student and kind of a troubled young woman. When I left my hometown, I had been out of school for a year and had spent that time working at the mall and driving around out in the oil patch and drinking and hanging out with my girlfriends. So I was actually well on my way to sort of settling in my hometown and having the kind of life that, you know, I had observed from many of the young girls and women who grew up in that place. So when I left town, I by the time I was leaving Odessa, I was not going off to any college. I had certainly not earned any scholarships anywhere. And I had to go out into the world. And, you know, I went to California, got a job waiting tables, and then started eventually taking classes at a community college. So I had kind of a roundabout journey. But yeah, most of the people that I grew up with stayed close to home. Most of them, many of them still live there today. Some of the girls I grew up with were young mothers. I often joked, and this is not a joke, but I guess a joke with air quotes. I often joked that I was in my mid-20s before I understood that there was something to aspire to other than getting pregnant and married young, you know. And I think to some degree that remains true in my hometown even today.
Now, you say that your characters are inspired in part by what you used to do as a child, eavesdropping on the conversations that your mother and her friends would have. What sort of things would they be talking about?
Yeah, and you're right. I was a very bookish kid. And when I didn't have my face stuck in a book, I was a prodigious eavesdropper. So I spent a lot of time as a little girl sitting on the back porch after dinner, listening to my mom and the neighbors and her girlfriends. This was the 70s, so they always had their cocktails and their cigarettes. And during oil booms, I listened to them talk about who had a new job, who was buying a new house, who was setting a little money aside. And during oil bust, I listened to them talk about who was leaving town, whose house had been foreclosed upon. I think a lot of people, when they think of the oil business, they think of these huge corporations and these oil executives who make tons of money and are, you know, devastating the environment. And of course, that's true. But the people that I'm interested in writing about are the men and women who work in the oil patch, who even in the best of oil booms are really just keeping a roof over their heads. For a lot of people that I grew up with, an oil boom means not only keeping a roof over your head, but maybe having a shot at putting a little money in a savings account, money that's often, you know, immediately sucked out of that account when the bust hits, right? Because it's such a dramatic, you know, contraction in the economy. So yeah, those were the stories I listened to. And of course, when I first began writing the book, it was terribly autobiographical. But of course, draft by draft, you know, these characters became deeply imagined fiction in their own right. But they are all, the voices were so very familiar to me.
Now, you tell us as much of the plot as you want to talk about. We have characters, Gloria Ramirez, who's 14 years old, and she has a sorry experience with a guy, and that's how it all begins. Explain.
Yeah, the book opens on the morning after Valentine's Day with a young Mexican American girl who's experienced a horrific assault out in the oil patch, and makes her way to a local farmhouse to ask for help. And from there, the book sort of toggles back and forth between points of view of several other women and girls in town, as well as Glory, and sort of chronicles the impact, the fallout of that crime on her and the other characters in the book, leading up to the months leading up to the trial and then the immediate aftermath of the trial.
And that's enough, I think, of a teaser to get everyone reading Valentine, because it is an absolutely gripping read. The structure of the book is almost like a series of short stories. That, I presume, is quite deliberate.
Yes, it is. I actually, the short story form is the form I feel most comfortable with, and in a lot of ways, it's the form I most love. And when I began the book, I had imagined that it would be a collection of linked stories. And I decided in very short order that there was enough of a through narrative to make it a novel. As much as I love the short story, one of the things I love most about the novel is that it gives you a little bit more room to maybe explore an idea. And there were some ideas I wanted to explore. How does one react when a wounded stranger, you know, shows up at her door? A question that in a lot of ways, I think maybe the biggest question any of us ever answers, right? Whether it's a young girl who's been the victim of a horrific crime, or it's a family of migrant workers who shows up at the door of your country, you know, seeking help for themselves. So I wanted to explore that idea. And I also really wanted to explore the idea of characters who maybe don't have a lot of resources, maybe not a lot of education or money or power, as these women do not have in West Texas in the 1970s, and how they somehow manage to hold each other up and to support each other, you know, and even to step up and act in ways that are courageous when they don't necessarily see themselves as heroic. So...
Now, West Texas, I'm sure, has changed. Odessa has probably changed. The demographics you mentioned, you know, people fetching up at as immigrants, and I'm sure the population is remarkably different. Is Odessa a place? I know you don't live there now. You live in Chicago, but is it a place you could live now?
Well, I still have family there, and I will tell you, when I first began working on the book, I realized in very short order that having grown up there, particularly as a little white girl in a deeply segregated town, that I didn't really know my town at all. And so I spent a lot of time doing research. One of the ways I sort of fell back in love with my hometown enough to write about it was by spending long days driving around out in the oil patch and sort of falling back in love with the land there. I don't know if I could live there again now. I have pretty deep roots in Chicago. I've been here 18 years, and it's the only home my son knows. But I have fallen back in love with it, and I do love the people who live there. And of course, right now I'm deeply concerned about them because my hometown is in the thick of a terrible, terrible outbreak of COVID-19. So I don't know if I've actually just answered your question.
Well, you ain't going back anyway, Elizabeth.
I go back. Look, it's family.
Yeah. Well, look, it's a great read, and I'm sure our listeners are looking forward to, if they haven't already got their hands on it online or from a bookstore that is open. It's called Valentine. We will be reviewing it from cover to cover on the 16th of July. But it's author Elizabeth Wetmore. Elizabeth, thank you very much for joining us on the program.